then the court is going to turn around and violate the very rule that's set out in Walters, because I can almost guarantee this court that every attorney who reads this opinion will then go down to court, the court reporter, and she'll say, well, what should I have in this affidavit? Well, I'll just say it's impossible. That's all that's necessary. That's all that was necessary under Thornton versus Fenelon. The court has said, you may state a conclusion, and that's all that's necessary. I submit that a proper affidavit, and these are things that we don't know now, or the Court of Appeals didn't know, a proper affidavit would have stated, there were X number of witnesses in this trial. The issues were complex. The trial lasted 20 days. I have five other statements of fact that I'm working on now. Court has not only been in session, which is really a relatively meaningless term, but it has actually been in trial for X number of days. But none of these things were set out for the Court of Appeal. And I challenged their affidavit in my answer to their request. I specifically pointed out for their benefit that the court reporter only gave a legal conclusion to the Court of Appeal and didn't state what was the cause of this impossibility. Virtually every affidavit I've read where a Rule 21C motion has been filed has stated to the court what the problem is, not just it's impossible. Because if that is the standard, then as I say, Rule 21C is going to grow greatly, and Rule 386 is going to be put by the board, because all an attorney or a court reporter has to do is say, Your Honor, it's impossible for me to get out this statement of fact. Please give me 4 years. Please give me whatever amount of time. And that's all the Court of Appeals had to act on. They could have amended the Rule 21C motion after it was pointed out to them that their affidavit was deficient. They could have amended it. They could have gotten another affidavit from that same court reporter stating, well, this record is going to be this amount long. I think in this case it's important for the court to know that if we're only talking about a newly discovered evidence point, there might have been witnesses whose testimony was unnecessary to a decision on that point. If I may go outside the record for just a moment, I remember one witness was a sociologist who said that the...
Counsel, we would prefer that you not get...
I apologize, Your Honor. At any rate...
It's hard for us to remember what's in and out of
yes,
the record.
Sir. I apologize, if you tell us,
it's all right.
I apologize, but when you're talking about newly discovered evidence, it's not every trial where every witness's testimony has to be transcribed. That determination could have been made long before August the 4th, and the court reporter could have then known on August the 4th what she needed to do. But she had no idea what she needed to do on August the 4th because petitioners never told her what they wanted.
Well, that's not exactly a correct statement that all you'd have to... It's not every motion for new trial that needs to be transcribed. Isn't the burden to show by the newly discovered evidence that it was not presented in the trial? Wouldn't they have to have the whole record in order to fulfill their burden under newly discovered evidence?
I do not believe so, Your Honor, and that's why I began to go out of the record, and I won't try that again. But they must show the relevancy of the newly discovered evidence to the evidence that they produced. Now, not every witness is going to be testifying to the same thing that everybody else in the trial testified to.
But aren't they obligated to show no duplication, that this is not merely duplicating what was offered at time of trial?
Well, that's part of it, Your Honor, but I submit that an appellee would be hard-pressed to show a duplication in some types of testimony. That's what I'm saying. That sort of statement could be made in the brief, and if it went unchallenged, which it surely would in some cases, well, then there would be no necessity for it. But at any rate, the Court of Appeals had no idea how many witnesses testified, had no idea how long the trial lasted. It might have lasted 2 hours. The only thing they had was it started on the 11th and ended on the 12th. That's full bore dire true verdict. I'm becoming repetitious, Your Honor, so I'm going to sit down in a moment. But what concerns me about this case is that if the Court of Appeals abused its discretion with a one-line statement. It's impossible for me to get out this statement of fact without any explanation of that, of what caused the impossibility. Then there is no Rule 386 anymore. It's gone. There's no necessity for an explanation in detail. I thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you, Counsel. Hear response from the petitioner.
May it please the Court. I would like to correct the record, if I might, at this point, just take a short departure. First of all, the affidavit of Kay's Wiregraff certainly did much more than just a one-line sentence. It's impossible for me to comply. Her affidavit contains in it a recitation of the fact that she only heard about the requirement to generate the statement of facts. I don't have the affidavit before me. I believe it was 8 days prior to the date on which it was supposed to be submitted to the Court of Appeals. So the language of her affidavit implies the point of concern in her affidavit. But I think the language of her affidavit is significant for one other reason, the most important reason, and that is that it's not remarkable. Kay's Wiregraff did not have surgery such as the court reporter in the Walters case did. She didn't have any of those extraordinarily lengthy documents to transcribe, such as the other court reporters in the affidavits referred to by Mr. Flatton. It was completely unremarkable. It was a normal trial of normal duration, requiring normal effort in which to generate the court reporter's statement of fact, and she was faced with a normal workload facing a normal court reporter. And this is why I attempted to highlight this aspect by asking all of the other working court reporters in Jefferson County to contribute an affidavit illustrating that 2 days didn't matter here, 4 days didn't matter. Kay's Wiregraff says, and we take her at her oath, I would assume she is an officer of the court swearing that the facts contained therein are true, and she said that with this appeal, not a hypothetical appeal as some of the other affidavits dealt with, but this appeal would require her an additional 60 days of time in order to prepare. I'm not a court reporter, and I'm not that familiar, as Mr. Flatton may be, with how long it takes a court reporter to gen out these documents. I know only that Kay's Wiregraff told me that she could not generate it in less than 60 days. If we accept that as true because it is sworn, she had 9 days. Claimed she needed 60 more. If it would require her 69 days to generate this statement of facts, the rule that we might adopt today, if we hold that we were less than diligent in needing an extension of time because we had not anticipated the need for the statement of facts and acted on a prior date to obtain one, the rule will direct that 6 days prior to the date on which we even had the hearing on the motion for new trial would have been the date on which we would have had to request the statement of facts in order for Kay's Wiregraff to have it prepared on time, if my math's correct. 6 days before we ever even approached the trial judge with the issue that was going to be the source of the appeal, we would have had to ask Kay's Wiregraff to give us a statement of facts, which would have had to include the transcript of what happened at the motion on the new for new trial, because one of the elements we were complaining about was the judge refused to allow the key witness to testify. So Kay's Wiregraff would have had to begin preparing a document which didn't even exist 6 days prior to the event. I think that's the point of our focus here. There's a danger here that if you create a rule that we were not diligent without going further in explanation, that you'll start a trend toward unnecessary preparation of statements of fact, which will further burden the court reporters who appear to be telling us that they have some burden that they're having difficulty dealing with at this present time. They may, in fact, have room to improve their performance, but we certainly would be adding to that burden. You would require everyone to anticipate or exercise some degree of clairvoyance to anticipate that an appealable error were going to occur in the future, and then prepare for the likelihood that they would need a transcript or a statement of facts and begin the generation of that document when it may in fact turn out to be completely unnecessary. My clients are not wealthy corporations in general. They're people who money is dear to them, and documents of this nature are costly documents. I'd be hard-pressed to explain to a client why I had to spend $500 or $1,000 for the preparation of a document that turned out to be completely unnecessary. Had the trial judge, within the 75 days allowed to him, decided that our motion was meritorious, which we had certainly believed it was, and granted us a new trial, the statement of facts would have been a totally senseless, worthless document, a needless use of the court reporter's time, and a needless expense to our client. I'll point out that with regard to what actually did happen, 10 working days had all transpired from the day on which the event occurred that triggered our knowledge of the fact that we were going to have a statement of facts. 10 working days. I submit, if the average practicing attorney faced with an appellate requirement were able to perfect his record in 10 days, that would probably speed up the system considerably. We look at Walters and compare the facts in Walters. Walters didn't take 10 days. Walters had already had 2 extensions of time, was told by the Court of Appeals that he'd better consider a mandamus of that court reporter if he required an additional extension, and he still had to go back for a third time. So the facts were so different in Walters that I don't think it's a fair comparison. I recall the 4 factors, and I apologize to the court. I've lived with this case for a long time, and I should have had it committed to memory, but it just escaped me. The 4 factors that narrow the decision that you need to make in this case are so unique and precise, I doubt that one case in 100 under Rule 21C would ever have the similar facts. The facts in our case were the only error being complained of was the overruling of the motion for a new trial. The motion was overruled by operation of law, thereby using up the entire 75-day period allowed under the rules. It was the type of appeal that mandates a statement of facts, as you pointed out. You can't argue that you presented new evidence and meet the test therefore, and that the trial court abused its discretion without virtually a complete statement of facts as to all the evidence adduced at trial. Pardon me. And it has to be the type of an appeal in which a motion for new trial was mandated by the rules. In other words, it was not an elective motion for new trial on our part. We were required to get a motion for new trial or present a request for motion for new trial. Those are the 4 factors then. Most of them are requirements of the rules imposed upon counsel over which he has essentially no control, up to and including the fact that he would then only have a 25-day period after the appealable event in which to generate or obtain a statement of facts. I think Case Wygraph was telling us it's a practical impossibility. I confess I coined that phrase. It's practically impossible because of the normal circumstances that existed. The attorneys, and I'm certain the bench, although I've never had the experience, we delve in line drawing every day in the documents that we prepare. How much information must I put in this document? Where can I draw the line? I submit it wasn't even a document I prepared here. Case Wygraph prepared her own affidavit. I requested that she submit to me an affidavit stating under oath that she could not provide me with a statement of facts within the time period I saw the rules provided. And she did that, and I didn't question it. It said, it's wholly impossible you've given me 8 days. And even in my limited experience at that point, I realized what she was saying. I think the supplemental affidavits show you that the court reporters were all saying that 8 days is certainly inadequate under normal circumstances. I think the implication is then that we were dealing with normal circumstances. I'll point out it was never challenged by the Court of Appeals. If there was an inadequacy in the affidavit, my client has been denied her right to an appeal in this state, which has an appeal. But yet, if it was based on the language of the affidavit, I think it's incumbent upon someone at the Court of Appeals level, perhaps, to indicate that that's the deficiency, and maybe indicate it within enough time that I could have provided the essential facts, presuming the facts existed. Certainly I couldn't generate the facts, but if I had provided some insufficient degree of information to the Court of Appeals to exercise their discretion, there is a time frame within which I can amend, even by right. I will point out that the Court of Appeals did not rule on the request for an extension of time until some 2.5 weeks after the time for which, during which I could have amended my motion for an extension of time. Although I filed it almost a week and a half before the time or the date on which I was required to file it. I filed it 7 days prior to the date on which the statement of facts was due, and I believe Rule 21C allows 15 days beyond that. So there was plenty of time within which the court to express its concern about the insufficiency of the information, and I could have provided it. The facts certainly existed. At least I'm confident that they did. This case can be decided, I believe, narrowly on its own facts without altering the rule as it currently exists and running the risk of creating a new category of dilatory avenues for clever attorneys to obtain continuances outside the rules pertinent to continuances. The court can even restrict, can even apply the definition that now exists without having to add the terms that I've chosen to coin, practical impossibility, by simply finding that the explanation we offered was a reasonable explanation. The key to it is the Walters decision, which clarifies the standard and says, I only have to show you that I didn't do it deliberately and I didn't do it intentionally. And if I've done nothing else today, I hope I've convinced the court that we believe there's merit in this argument. It's why we're here. It's why we went to the Court of Appeals. It's why we went before the trial judge with our newfound witness, the sole eyewitness to the events that occurred that were the basis of the trial, and tried to get a new opportunity for our client to present its case on the merits. If I have done nothing else, I hope I've convinced you that we are sincere in believing we were diligent, if diligence is required, although it's not to be found in the language. And we believe that we reasonably explain the need for more time to the Court of Appeals. And we believe that the current rules and the current standards allow this court to find that we did apply for an extension of time and presented a reasonable explanation. I thank the court for its time.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be submitted on briefs and oral argument. The court will take 10 minutes recess.
Please rise.